Welcome to Talk World Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
This week on Talk World Radio, we are talking about what I think can be called a U.S. coup in Pakistan. We will see if my guest agrees. Professor Junaid Ahmad teaches religion, law, and global politics and is the director of the Center for the Study of Islam and Decoloniality in Islamabad, Pakistan. Junaid, welcome back to Talk World Radio.
David, it's always a pleasure in my conversations with you. Thank you.
I believe it's been maybe a year and a half since you were on this program on this same topic, so we clearly need an update, but we should probably start with very quick background for people who've been living underground on Imran Khan and on recent years in Pakistani politics.
Yeah, absolutely, David. And thanks for the reminder. I think anything over the past 2 years I've done with you will be about the same thing. The regime change operation that ousted former Prime Minister Imran Khan and the enormous outpouring of support that followed that surprised everyone, including Imran Khan himself. Over a year of protests and rallies throughout the country gave a lot of people hope that, okay, this new experiment, and when I say new, it means it's kind of like whether in the U.S., if you had, yes, the traditional Republicans and the Democratic Party, and you had your version of those in Pakistan, but, and maybe we'd argue over this, but I think much more corrupt here in Pakistan, and all of a sudden, the Green Party or some other makes, you know, a huge victory in terms of Congress members, maybe even president. That's exactly what it was like here in Pakistan. And I think we have to remember that Imran Khan, so former cricketer and philanthropist turned prime minister, became involved in politics, that the hope by everyone in Pakistan, everyone that wants at least some decency in the functions of the state and of government and various institutions and so on. The hope was that am I still there, David?
You are.
Okay. Yeah, so the hope was that this new face and this new movement, the party has been called the PTI, Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf, and that's the Movement for Justice. And the hope and the expectation was that at least this can't get any worse than what we've had before. And that, you know, and that's why I wanted kind of our viewers and listeners to see what the kind of analogous situation would be in the United States. So it was remarkable that a third political party could make inroads, not just inroads, but in fact become victorious in a duopoly type of a system that's in the U.S. and in Pakistan of the traditional political elites, the Pakistan People's Party of the House of Bhutto Zardari, and the other one, the Pakistan Muslim League of the Nawaz Group. And as I stated in my recent article, I wasn't making any predictions what the political dispensation will result. But I did say that right now, the chief of army staff, and our viewers should know that in Pakistan, that is the most powerful. That is the most powerful individual in the country. So he, at this point, I mean, we can go back, but at this point, just to bring all our viewers up to date, at this point, he has effectively, you know, he's the kingmaker. And he has chosen, so these elections we recently have, many of us call them generals' selections. and he's chosen one of the traditional political parties, the Pakistan Muslim League Nawaz, to nominate its prime minister. And of course, the only way they could do that is the same way they ousted Imran Khan in the first place. Every single political party getting together And not only that, plus the military being on your side and Washington. So Han was up against a lot of forces. And it seems like, once again, despite the fact that his political party, which could not run on its political party platform, had to run as independent candidates, and they still secured the most seats in these parliamentary elections. I mean, it's truly miraculous considering the type of repression that has taken place of specifically Imran Khan's party, Tehreek-e-Insaf, the repression. I mean, I don't remember it in my lifetime in Pakistan, what we saw. And it became very clear to us that the Khan virus, as I call it, was really threatening to a lot of people. Now, I never thought of him as any type of revolutionary or anything like that, but in these systems, you know, even being mildly pro-democracy or pro-social justice tends to get you eliminated somehow or the other.
And what are the policies that made him and his party so incredibly popular? Is it just anti-corruption, or what other policies are people turning out and voting in support of, despite Khan being locked up and the party being off the ballots?
Well, that's the interesting, David. I often wonder myself, what's the appeal beyond, you know, he's this kind of superstar and you know, very articulate in his speeches and so on. That, how was it possible? And like I said, I think even Khan himself was surprised after he was ousted. At the just the massive scale of these rallies and protests throughout the country. Some of the largest ones in the history, specifically in the province of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, KPK. That is the province that borders Afghanistan, and where the United States for a very long time says all problems come from on this side of the border in Pakistan. And in that province, you certainly had the largest get-together rallies and protests in its history. And so, David, I come back to this question, you know, what has enamored the Pakistani population, particularly the youth? But I used to think that, but increasingly it's basically, I mean, all ages, cross sections of society. And I don't think it can be simply explained by specific policies that he implemented, because to be fair and honest, I mean, whether Khan himself was perhaps well-intentioned, but, you know, a single individual can't take on an entire system. And so, you know, he had an idea of an Islamic welfare state. He certainly provided, much improved social services in terms of health and education. But at the end of the day, my conclusion is this, David, that I think the people, remarkably, maybe I would not be as forgiving, but the people were forgiving in some ways of Khan's term in power, because they still sincerely believe that the guy himself is well-intentioned, and that he's, and this is kind of my analysis as well, politically, he's a novice, naive, and he has had to learn the hard way. It's not so easy. And even the people that are with you, well, who knows where they'll go the next day, wherever the winds are blowing. So I think that because of his lack of experience in formal politics, I think people still genuinely see, and this is everyone, it's not like, you know, a couple of, this is everyone, because we know this, because that's the outpouring of support, the recent elections, why would they vote for this party? So I come down to this, and you know, maybe that's unfortunate that we continue to personalize this so much, but someone who's willing to sacrifice that much, you know, David, in the past, we have had civilian prime ministers overthrown by military coups and so on. No one was out in the streets trying to defend those prime ministers. No one was out. For the ordinary person here, you know, we often talk about Pakistan, you know, going from military rule to civilian rule. Honestly, David, for the ordinary person, it makes no difference. It makes no difference. This is kind of an intra-elite squabble between the so-called civilian politicians and the military. And it's basically, we need to respect each other's piece of the pie, you know? And so never trickles down in any way to the improvement of the lives of the population. So I just raise that point because in the past, including the very popular, the comparisons are often made of Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, you know, one of the founders of the Pakistan People's Party in the 1970s, very different from the Pakistan People's Party of today, by the way. So, you know, the rhetoric then was of socialism, Islamic socialism, that type of thing. And clearly he was a very smooth political operative, Bhutto, very intelligent in that regard. But he unfortunately had his own shortcomings. He was also power hungry. Nothing like the material corruption that we've had since the 1990s in terms of our civilian rule. But at the end of the day, he had alienated so many people by his authoritarianism, by relying on that same military that could have been actually checked. We should remember the Pakistani military was defeated and humiliated in 70 to 71 in the War of Independence for East Pakistan, which became Bangladesh. That was, in my opinion, the one time where they could be just confined to their barracks and never leave those. But unfortunately, even our most popular politician, Bhutto, Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, even he used that same military to suppress opposition, dissent, and basically dissolve provincial assemblies where he had opposition. So I just say that because this has been nothing new, where the military is conniving with other political forces to oust someone. The only thing new and the very radically important thing that's been new in this regard is the way there's been an outpouring of support. And again, David, I think that both you and I, when we come down and look at the actual political performance of Khan in power, will be severely disappointed. Yeah. But I don't want to have this attitude towards the people that, oh, well, you know, they're just dumb, silly, foolish, and they're under false consciousness. No, I think it's none of that. I think there's a willingness to accept the fact that Khan was politically naive and wasn't experienced, but the guy is well-intentioned. In the past, when our prime ministers were ousted, immediately they'll run to Dubai, Saudi Arabia, London, and that's fine for the military. Okay, that's great. Just you can leave the country. Khan refused. He said, I'm not going anywhere. So that's inspiring to many people.
Junaid, Ahmad, the popularity, the public support is different, but also it's not a traditional military coup. There's a number of different tactics, from assassination attempts to prosecutions and imprisonment, that have been used here. When I call it a U.S.-backed coup, is that fair? Is that accurate? And what do we know about the U.S. role?
Well, I think it's very accurate. Now, one can debate how much was this really, or to what extent was this sought by Washington alone, or also by domestic political actors? Certainly, the one factor that, of course, unfortunately, many of our friends and comrades in Pakistan were not willing to acknowledge was that the Chief of Army Staff and the Military High Command were also behind it. And because at the time, the way the actual ousting from power happened is through what's called a vote of no confidence in parliament. That once you your own party members are leaving your party and you don't get the sufficient votes to have a parliamentary majority, you can have a vote of no confidence and you'll have to step down. Now, the interesting thing is, coming back to the American role, and many of our viewers will probably know this, but there was the famous cipher. An official diplomatic cable that was sent from the Pakistani ambassador to the U.S. to the Pakistan Foreign Ministry. In it, it basically conveys the details of the meeting between the Pakistani ambassador to the U.S. and an assistant secretary of state, Donald Liu of the United States. And in that meeting, and of course, I mean, poor Donald Liu, I don't want to pick on him. Of course, he's representing the views of the White House and the State Department, because it's been very funny how his name is just everywhere now. He's a very popular guy in Pakistan. Just tell him not to come here. And so he basically conveyed to the ambassador that, look, we really don't like this character Khan and his role in the Russia and Ukraine conflict, because what disastrously happened to Khan was that he was arriving in Moscow the day when they launched their special military operation in Ukraine. Now, I often ask people, like, and because immediately he got, contacted by everyone in the West, and his own, the generals were also saying, look, there's a lot of pressure. You have to condemn Putin right there. Now, I would ask anyone if they would have the courage to be meeting Putin and then condemn him, maybe from afar. But no, it was ridiculous. I mean, he was going there for cheap wheat, cheap gas, and all those things. But the fact that he didn't denounce him while shaking his hand perturbed many people. And so it's this bizarre term they use. We do not like his aggressive neutrality. It seems right. Like an oxymoron, but that's exactly what Assistant Secretary of State said to the Pakistani ambassador, who was dumbfounded. What is this guy saying? Khan is not taking a position or anything. But I raise this point also to point out that this was probably the last straw that broke the camel's back, because there were a whole set of grievances that made Washington irate, from Khan's desire to have an independent foreign policy, his outspoken support for the Palestinians, for Kashmiris, all sorts of things. David, we have to realize that we, particularly in the post 9/11 world, in the Muslim majority world, in the Arab world, Middle East, we have been living in an era, and of course it precedes 9/11 as well, in which the United States has controlled all of these Muslim despots, and they've been accountable to no one but, you know, Washington and so on. So I think that this is why Khan emerges as this superstar in the Muslim world, not because he's so revolutionary. It's just that there's no one like him at this point, really.
It's still remarkable that the crime is neutrality, that not supporting either side of a war is unacceptable. You have to support the proper side, the side that Washington tells you to support. Here I am living in the United States, more or less free, and opposing both sides in every way I can. But if you're running a country somewhere in the world, you must support the U.S. side and oppose only the Russian side.
But David, here's the interesting thing. The very close allies like India also decided to remain neutral. And despite all of these sanctions on Russia, you would think that India, which is very close to the United States, part of all sorts of different treaties and so on, has remained, not only remained neutral, it has continued to openly buy gas and oil from Russia. So the interesting thing is, so there's no pressure on the Indian government, but they consider Pakistan such a satrapy, it's a protectorate of Washington, that they can just have their viceroys there dictate exactly how we should operate in Pakistan. And of course, I can't blame Washington. They've had servile and docile and obedient military leaders and civilian leaders. So this was something new for Washington. And so, I mean, just what you were saying, you're right. It's not only not been traditional in the sense that once Khan was ousted, there's this huge momentum of support throughout the country, but it's also the way they have continuously targeted Khan. And again, I mean, maybe it's they've been very incompetent in this regard. That's, my view. And I think that it's, at some point, even Washington has realized that. Because before, there was silence on this diplomatic cable called the cipher. We didn't do it, etc. When The Intercept finally published the contents of that cipher, verified by everyone, and even not just Washington denied it, even our military establishment here, Khan is crazy. He's making all this stuff up. It's published by The Intercept. Now, the State Department is like, I remember the spokesman, now at this point, is not even in denial mode. It's more like, well, this is normal behavior between governments. This is normal talk. Yeah, normal talk is, if you oust your prime minister, all will be forgiven. That's what the assistant said. I'm not sure if that's really normal between countries. And the military high command, which in the first place, denied that this ever existed, Khan's a nutcase, etc. Then realized it was leaked, tried to ban The Intercept, but, you know, in this day and age, you know, these things can't happen. And all of a sudden, perfect for them, now we're going to charge Khan for treason, for leaking an official document that poses a threat to national security. Go figure. And so you're absolutely right. It's the ouster. They thought that would do it. Plan A, plan B, bring him some cases against him. He'll be in the courts. No, it doesn't work. Plan C is what you pointed out. Assassination. Maybe they should have done that at the beginning. Two attempts failed. After that, it comes all of these bogus charges of terrorism, treason, etc. And he's jailed, isolated. No. Yet the party still wins big time.
But it wasn't treason against the Pakistani government or the Pakistani people. If anything, it was treason against the U.S. government, which is, you know, what they're prosecuting an Australian publisher in Julian Assange for, treason against the U.S. government when he's not from the U.S. So it seems you can be guilty of this crime no matter where you are.
Absolutely. I'm glad you raised the case of Julian Assange as well. I mean, I think that many of our well-meaning comrades here wanted to pretend, because many of them, you know, disliked Khan and thought that Khan was stealing, as Bismarck, Khan was stealing the socialist thunder from the socialists here. So I think that they were willing to give credence to the fact that, well, this is a very parliamentary way in which you've gotten rid of Khan. And only months later, they had to kind of go quiet because everything that Khan was saying proved to be correct. That, in fact, Washington was behind it. That, in fact, the chief of army staff, in collusion with both Washington as well as the kleptocratic politicians here, was also behind it. So, I mean, at the time, I said that, look, you know, I'm not saying that what Khan is saying is the confirmed truth. But I'm saying that also don't expect for the United States or the CIA to leave a paper trail of exactly how we're going to. That's never happened. We find out later, actually.
Oh, sometimes they do. Sometimes they do.
Yeah, sometimes they do. Sometimes they're lucky. But you know,
Ukraine,
I was saying,
we got audio.
Naive. Yeah.
We got audio. Sorry? Tapes. We got audio tapes on Ukraine before it happens. So, you know, sometimes it's pretty blatant. But so what's going to happen now? Is he going to remain in prison? His party has won the elections, but they don't get to be in charge, even though they won the elections. What happens next?
Right. I think the one takeaway from this, David, is that the party, not so much, I mean, not everyone that's supportive of Khan and this movement is necessarily part of the party, although beyond my expectations, many are still behind the party. I mean, it's remarkable. These are people that have been imprisoned, tortured, forced to renounce politics, at least half of the leadership. That's how the military establishment here operates. It blackmails you. It goes after your families, all of these things, the military intelligence apparatus here. So it was very understandable when people say that, oh, you know, all these people left, many of them good people. Well, if you're going to, you know, their families and all of that, it's understandable why they would. So this victory, the most seats in parliament, happens despite all of this happening for more than a year, David. And the military high command and the new chief of army staff, perhaps the most hated in the Pakistan's country and in the history of Pakistan. And as I said in my article, there's no shortage of competition there. But he, along with the he had assured Washington and his principal kind of financier, the House of Sharif, one of the political parties, Pakistan Muslim League, that, look, I've eliminated this party, PTI. They can't even run on PTI. A couple of them run as independents. He failed miserably. Even as independents, they won the majority of the seats. So that is miraculous. That is, I would never have expected this. No one expected this. And this is why even now, just now, we finally hear the State Department come out with a pretty good, you know, harsh criticisms of these elections and so on. So many members of Congress now raising concerns. Some are, you know, really denouncing the way the military has interfered in this. One wonders where were they before? But I think I think this is a general sense. I mean, I think that many of the particularly Democratic members of Congress, including Representative Ilhan Omar, who had met with Imran Khan, I'm sure they wanted to say something earlier, but they were just taking their cues from the Democratic Party leadership in the White House and in Congress. And I think now they felt a bit free because I think that by this point, you know, Washington is like our State Department's, our White House has been lying for you guys for this long and still you don't deliver our results. So everyone is kind of caught with their pants down in this situation. And so what has happened now is, of course, as I said, that the chief of Army staff, he's no longer thinking about big picture stuff. He's thinking about how to save himself. And so he goes to the party that financed him, Pakistan Muslim League Nawaz Group, the House of Sharif. And lo and behold, I guess my very teeny tiny prediction became correct. He has basically had one of the Sharif brothers become the prime minister. And I think the daughter of one of the former prime minister, Nawaz Sharif, maybe become the chief minister of Punjab. So I was expecting this. But the takeaway, David, is that clearly there is a massive movement which actually represents the will of the people. And let's see how they're going to suppress this. I personally think, and I'm not the only one, that this is such a major victory for that movement, that despite all the rigging, elections, repression, etc., they can still do it. David, this is Pakistan. This is where the military intelligence, they control who wins, who doesn't. And they broke through that. So that's inspiring. That's motivating.
We've got less than 2 minutes left. And I want to ask about your own situation. Are you safe? Or is everyone happy with the way you are talking about the Pakistani government?
Well, David, I think that we've been allowed a small window to let's see how long this lasts. So I want to thank our friends at the State Department and the National Security Council for also getting the courage to criticize. Because now, and of course, this has been my criticism of the Pakistani media as well, including like our most well-respected newspaper, Dawn, that they just buckled under pressure throughout this entire period. Now they're talking about the democratic will expressing itself, defying the powers that be. And I was like, wow, I wish you guys could have done this 2 years, a year, 6 months, 3 months before, when actually the people needed your coverage and reporting. So it's clear that we've found a window to talk about all these things. And that's why I said, if it's coming from Washington, and it's unfortunate because it does seem like some of our newspapers turn to Washington to see what they can and can't say, not even to our military rulers, because it's all of a sudden you see that. So now it's not so difficult, but of course we have to be cautious.
It's always incredible the influence Washington has on other countries, where the people supposedly represented by the U.S. government here in the U.S. mostly don't have a clue what's going on. We've got to inform ourselves. Junaid Ahmad, thank you for everything you're doing. I hope you stay safe and keep doing it. And thanks again for coming on Talk World Radio.
Thanks so much, David. As always, it was a delight and a pleasure.
This is Talk World Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. Read or listen to today's Peace Almanac entry at peacealmanac.org. All past shows can be heard at talkworldradio.org. Talk World Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way.